prince, he cannot make me. But he was a prince, and Ula was wrong. The beginnings of the spell crept into Ula's dreams that night. She could not help it. Even as she'd denied Roth, she'd started to hear the shape of the music in her head, and though she tried to quell the melody, it found its way to her. She woke up humming, a dull warmth in her chest. The flame would have to be built in her body and be born on her breath. But then what? Could it be transferred into an object? No. As she came fully awake, she sat up in her bed and tried to shake the echo of the song and the delicious pull of those questions from her head. She could not do what Roth asked. The risk was too great and the price too high. But at breakfast, Roth filled Signy's water glass himself instead of leaving it to a servant. At lunch, he peeled the orange on his plate and fed her one of the slices, and when they went down to dinner, he turned away from the human girl on his left and spent the night making Signy howl with laughter. It was a careful campaign he waged. He found ways to make sure he was seated next to Signy at meals. He rode beside her on every hunt. He lavished his golden smiles on her, tentatively at first, as if he was unsure of their reception. Though Ula knew that shyness was a ruse. Roth watched Signy now as she had once watched him. He let her catch him looking. Each time, her cheeks flushed pink. Each time, Ula saw new hope flare within her. Bit by bit, moment by moment, in a thousand small gestures, he made Signy believe he was falling in love with her, and Ula could do nothing but observe. The night before the great ball, the last of the parties before they would return to the sea, Signy slipped under the covers of Ula's bed, glowing with the hope Roth had kindled inside her.
"When we said goodnight, he pressed his lips to my wrist," Signy said, placing her own lips to the blue veins where her pulse beat. "He took my hand and placed it against his heart."
"Are you sure he can be trusted?" Ula asked, so gently, so carefully, as if she were trying to hold broken glass. But Signy recoiled, clutched her kissed hand to her chest like a talisman.
"How can you ask that?"
"You are not noble."
"But that's the magic of it. He doesn't care. He's grown weary of noble girls. Oh, Ula, it is more than I could have hoped. To think he could want me above all others."
"Of course he could," Ula murmured. "Of course." Signy sighed and flopped back against the pillows, slender hands pressed to her brow, as if she suffered from headache.
"It cannot all be real. He cannot possibly mean to make me his wife."
She bounced her dainty heels against the sheets, kicking the way humans did when they were trying not to drown. She had never been more beautiful. Ula tasted poison in her mouth.
"Do you think I might make a passable princess?" Signy asked.
Charming Roth. More clever than Ula had ever imagined. If Ula did as the prince asked, he would give Signy all she wanted, or at least the illusion of it. If Ula did not, he would break Signy's heart, and Ula knew it would destroy her friend. It was one thing for Signy to have loved Roth from afar, but how deeply had she let herself fall now that he'd given her permission to love him? The dam had broken. There was no calling back the water. So it was decided.
"You would make a passable princess," Ula said,
"but a far better queen." Signy seized Ula's wrists.
"You spoke to the apprentice. You found a spell for the flame?"
"A song," Ula said, "but it will be dangerous." Signy pressed a kiss to her friend's cheek.
"There is nothing you cannot do."
"And nothing I will not do to protect you," Ula vowed. "The bargain is made." Signy was all joy the next day, asking Ula to sing her a dress for the ball, laughing that she cared for mortal clothes no longer. Ula prayed Roth would make Signy happy. Though he might not make a great king, he would at least be a cunning one. Besides, she would be there at his right hand to make sure he kept their bargain. Now she knew she was not just Sildroher, but something else, too. She had witch's blood in her veins. Roth would make Signy a queen and treat her as such, or Ulla would bring the roof of his palace down on his kingly head. Signy brought one of her mortal dresses to Ulla's room. They threw open the trunks and chose the best pearls and beading from the wardrobes and sang them together into a gown of copper fire that made Signy look like a living conflagration. A good reminder for Roth. When they were done, there was little left for Ulla, so she plucked a clutch of irises from the garden, and from them, and a slender scrap of silk, she sang a purple gown hemmed in gold. They ascended the great stairs and passed the landing where the clever mirror had been set to entertain the guests who were already clowning before it. Their reflections waved to them, then preened in their fine clothes. Up to the grand ballroom, Ulla and Signy climbed, and there they joined the celebration. Ulla danced with anyone who asked that night. She had not bothered with slippers, and her nimble feet peeked from beneath her skirts as she whirled and leapt on the marble floor. But she took no pleasure from the perspiration on her skin, the rapid keening of the fiddles. For all its wonders, she'd grown weary of the human world and the constant press of mortal desire. She longed for the sea, for the mother she knew, for the barely broken quiet. She would have been happy to return now, before midnight struck, but there was still work to be done on land. Work that would secure all their fortunes. Ulla saw Roth disappear from the crowd. She saw his brothers drinking and dancing on this, the last night, and then the clock was striking the 11th hour. She found Signy in the crowd and pressed her palm to the damp small of her back. "It's time," she said. Hand in hand, they left the ball and went to meet Roth outside Ulla's chamber. When Ulla pushed open the door, she could already feel the wrongness that had settled there. The chamber had become familiar to her, dear to her in its own way, despite her homesickness. She was used to its smells, stone and wax and the pines far below, but now there was something, someone in her bed. In the moonlight, she saw the body laid out upon the covers. "I do not wish to do this here."
"We're out of time," said Roth.
Ulla drew closer to the bed.
"He's young," she said, a sickness growing in her gut. His hands and feet were bound. His chest rose and fell evenly, his mouth hanging open slightly.
"He's a murderer. Sentenced to hang. In a way, this is a kindness."
This death would be painless, private, no wait in a prison cell, no walk up the gallows steps, or crowd to jeer him. Could that be called a kindness?
"You drugged him?" Signy asked.
"Yes, but he'll wake eventually, and the hour of return comes on. Hurry!"
Ulla had told him they would need a vessel of pure silver to capture the flame. From a case by the window, Roth drew a square silver lantern. Into its side, the symbol of his family had been cut, a three-pronged triton. There was little other preparation to be made. Ulla had worked the spell again and again in her mind, practiced snippets of it separately before she would try to piece together the whole. And if she was honest, she'd had the sound of it with her since she'd first made the suggestion to Roth in the garden. He had pushed her to this moment, but now that they were here, some shameful part of her thrilled to the challenge. She knelt to face the hearth and set down the silver lantern. Signy settled beside her, and Ulla lit the white birch branches that she'd lain in the grate. The night was far too hot for a fire, but the flame was required.
Said Roth.
Without turning, Ulla silenced him with a raised hand.
"Watch me," she said. "Await my signal. He might be a prince, but tonight he would follow her orders."
She kept her hand in the air, her eyes on the flames, and slowly she began the melody. The song built in easy phrases as if Ulla was stacking a different kind of kindling. The melody was something new, not quite a healing song, not quite a making song, she gestured to Signy to join.
The sound of their twined voices was low and uneasy. The striking of flint. The hop and crackle of sparks.
Then the song jumped like fire catching. Ula could feel it now, a warm glow inside her. A flame she would breathe into the lantern and, in one bright moment, make a future for them all. The price was the boy on the bed, a stranger. Little more than a child. But weren't they all children, really? Ula kept to the melody, pushed the thoughts from her head. The boy is a murderer, she reminded herself. Murderer. She kept that word in her head. As the song rose higher, as the blaze in the hearth leapt wild and orange, as the discord sharpened and the heat in her belly grew. Murderer, she told herself again, but she did not know if she meant the boy or herself. Sweat broke over her brow. The song filled the room so loud she worried they might draw someone's attention, but all were below, dancing and feasting. The moment came, a high crescendo. Ula dropped her hand like a flag of surrender. Even above the sound of their voices, she heard a horrible wet thunk. And the boy cried out, woken from his sleep by the blade piercing his chest. She heard muffled moaning and knew Roth must have a hand on the boy's mouth as he cut. Signy's frightened gaze flicked to the bed. Ula told herself not to look, but she couldn't help it. She turned and saw Roth's back, hunched over his victim as he did his work, his shoulders too broad, his gray cloak like the pelt of a beast. Ula turned her eyes back to the fire and sang, feeling tears slide down her cheek, knowing they had crossed a border into lands from which they might never return. But there was nowhere else to look when Roth knelt beside her and slipped two fresh pink human lungs into the pyre. This was what the spell required. Breath. The fire demanded air, just as humans did. It would need to breathe for itself beneath the sea. The flames closed over the wet tissue, fizzing and spitting. Ula felt the magical heat within her bank, and for a moment she thought both fires would simply go out. Then, with a loud snap, the flames roared up in the grate as if they had a voice themselves. Ula fell backward, fighting the urge to cry out as the blaze in her gut tore through her, up through her own lungs, her throat. Something was horribly wrong. Or was this the pain that creation required? Her eyes rolled back in her head, and Signy reached for her, then cringed backward, as flames seemed to flicker beneath Ula's skin, traveling her arms, lighting her up like a paper lantern. Ula smelled burning and knew her hair had caught fire. She released a wail, and it became part of the song as flames poured from her throat and into the silver vessel. Signy was weeping. Roth had his bloody hands clenched before him. Ula could not stop screaming. She could not stop the song. She seized Signy's arm, pleading, and Signy reached forward to slam the silver lantern shut. Silence. Ula crumpled to the floor. She heard Signy cry her name and tried to answer, but the pain was too great. Her lips were blistered. Her throat still felt as if it was burning. Her whole body shook and convulsed. Roth held the silver lantern in his hands, the shape of his family's Triton glowing with the golden light. "Roth," said Signy, "go to the ballroom, get the others. We need to sing healing. My voice won't be enough." But the prince wasn't listening. He walked to the dressing table and upended the basin, dousing the lantern. The flame did not even sputter. Ula moaned. "Roth!" Signy snapped, and some part of Ula's heart returned at the anger in her friend's voice. "We need help!" The clock began to chime the half hour. Roth seemed to return to himself. "It's time to go home," he said.
"She's too weak," said Signy. "She won't be able to sing the transformation."
"That's true," Roth said slowly, and the regret in his words set Ula alive with fear.
"Roth!"
Ula gasped his name. Her voice was a shattered thing, barely a rasp.
"What have I done?"
she thought wildly. What have I done? I'm sorry, he said.
Are there any words so cursed?
The lantern must be my gift only.
Despite the pain, Ula wanted to laugh.
No one will believe you worked that song.
Signy will be my witness.
I will not, Signy spat.
We will tell them you and I forged the song together, that the lantern is a sign of our love, that I am a worthy king and you are a worthy queen.
You took a human life, Ula gasped. You spilled human blood.
Did I?
Roth said. And from his cloak he drew Ula's sicker knife. He'd wiped it mostly clean, but the wet remnants of blood still gleamed on its blade.
You took a boy's life, an innocent page who caught you working blood magic.
Innocent?
Ula shook her head, and fresh pain flared in her throat.
No,
she moaned.
No.
You said he was a criminal, cried Signy. A murderer.
You knew, said Roth. Both of you knew. You were as eager as I, as hungry. You just wouldn't look your ambition in the eye.
Signy shook her head, but Ula wondered. Had either of them bothered to look closely at the boy's soft hands, at his clean face? Or had they simply wanted this enough that they'd been willing to leave the ugly work to Roth? Roth dropped the blade at Ula's feet.
She cannot return now. The blade is sacred. It can touch nothing human or be corrupted. It's useless.
Signy was sobbing.
You cannot do this. You cannot do this, Roth.
He knelt, and the flame of the lantern caught the gold of his hair, the deep ocean of his eyes.
Signy, it is done.
That was when Ula understood. It was Signy who had asked her to unlock her chest to make her a gown.
Why?
She rasped.
Why? He said he needed the knife to secure your loyalty.
Signy wept.
In case you changed your mind about the spell.
Oh, Signy, Ula thought as her eyes filled with fresh tears. My loyalty never wavered. And it was never his.
It is done, Roth repeated. Stay with Ula and live in exile. Pay the price with her when the humans discover her crime. Or, he shrugged, return to the sea as my bride. It is cruel, I know it is, but kings must sometimes be cruel. And to be my queen, you must be cruel now, too.
Signy,
Ula managed. Her name hurt more to speak than any other word.
Please.
Signy's tears fell harder, splashed over the knife. She touched her fingers to its ruined blade.
Ula,
she sobbed.
I cannot lose everything. Not everything. Not everything.
Signy shook her head.
I am not strong enough for this fight.
You are,
Ula rasped past the tortured flesh of her throat.
We are together as we have always been.
Signy brushed her cool knuckles over Ula's cheek.
Ula, my fierce Ula, you know I was never strong.
My fierce Ula. She saw then what she had been to Signy all along. A shelter. A defense. Ula had been the only rock to cling to. So Signy had held on, but now the seas had calmed, and she was slipping away to seek other shelter. She was letting go. Ula found that she was tired. The pain had devoured her strength.
Rest,
said a voice inside her. Her mother? Or the witch mother she'd never known? The mother who had left her to the mercy of the waves? If Signy could leave her behind so easily, too, maybe it was best not to try to hold on. Ula had made a vow to protect Signy, and she'd done it. That had to mean something. She released her friend's hand, a final kindness. After all, she was the strong one.
"Leave the knife,"
Ula croaked in her broken speech, and prayed that death would close over her like water. But Signy did not pick up the knife. Instead, she turned her eyes to Roth, and in the end, this was the thing that doomed all of Sondermann. Ula could forgive betrayal, another abandonment, even her own death. But not this moment, when after all her sacrifice, she begged for mercy and Signy sought a prince's permission to grant it. Roth nodded. "Let it be our gift to her." Only then did Signy place the blade in Ula's hand. Roth took up the lantern, and without another word, they were gone. Ula lay in the dark, the Sickern knife clutched in her fingers. She felt the stillness of the room, the cold grate, the chill presence of the hollowed corpse on the bed. She could end her life now, simply, cleanly. No one would ever know what had happened. She would be buried in the ground or burned, whatever they did to criminals here. But bright behind her eyelids, she saw Signy's face as she turned to Roth, seeking the approval of her prince. She could not stop seeing it. Ula felt hate bloom in her heart. What gave her strength, then? We cannot know for sure. That contrary thing inside her? The hard stone of rage that all lonely girls possess? She dragged herself across the room, heard the clock chime. She had only a quarter hour. Her voice was gone, her knife was worthless, corrupted by mortal blood, and yet witch's blood ran in Ula's veins, so why had the blade worked upon her in the first place? Because she had fashioned it? Because she had sung its enchantments? Perhaps, like her, it had been corrupted from the start. That meant the knife might work again. It didn't matter. She had no voice. She could make the cuts, but without song, they would only bleed her. Ula hauled herself up by the edge of her dressing table and saw the horror she had become. Her lips were blistered, her hair burned away in places, showing pink scalp. Still, she saw the shadow of the girl who had looked into this mirror and seen beauty looking back at her. I was not made to please princes. But for what, then? Ula thought she knew. She might as well have taken her knife to that boy's heart herself. Roth had made her a murderer. Maybe she would prove to have a talent for the act. Ula smiled, and her burnt lips split. Blood trickled down her chin. She slammed her hand into the mirror, felt the glass cut through her knuckles as it shattered. She took the largest piece, and then, with shaking steps, clinging to the walls, she made her way down the stairs, down, down to the entry hall. It was empty now. The guests were all in the ballroom. She could hear the stomping of their feet, the distant swell of music. Far below, at the bottom of the steps, two guards leaned against the vast doorframe, their backs to Ula, looking out onto the torch-lined drive. She went to her knees, half-crawling, and made her way to the clever mirror. Here, in the gleaming light of the entry, she could see the damage she had done to herself more clearly. Ula raised her hand to touch the glass, and the girl in the mirror did the same, tears filling her bloodshot eyes.
"Oh," Ula said on a soft sob. "Oh, no. No. No,"
echoed the mirror girl mournfully, her voice faint and fractured. Ula gathered her strength, though it pained her to do it, to force vibration past the raw flesh of her throat, to hear the weak sound that emerged. She made herself part her lips and form a note. It wobbled but held, and the girl in the mirror sang too. Their voices were still weak but stronger together. Ula reached into the pocket of her skirts and pulled out the shard of glass from her dressing table. She held it up to the mirror, finding the right angle, finding herself in the reflection. There, The two mirrors reflected each other, infinite ruined girls in infinite empty hallways. And infinite voices that grew, one on top of the other, the note building and building, first a chorus, then a flood. As the song grew, Ula saw the guards turn, saw the horror in their eyes. She didn't care. She kept the mirror aloft, and drew the sicker knife with her other hand, lifted her fine iris skirts, and slashed across her thighs. The wound was different this time. She could tell. The knife was different, and so was she. The guards rushed toward Ula, but now all she knew was pain, and without hesitation she changed the song, drawing her chorus of ruined girls with her, shifting from transformation to the music of the storm. Her talent nimble as ever, even if her throat bled around the notes she demanded. Thunder cracked, shaking the palace walls, hard enough to drive the guards down the stairs. Storm magic, the first she had learned, the first they all learned, the easiest, though impossible to accomplish on your own. But Ula was not alone. All these broken, betrayed girls were with her, and what a terrible sound they made. Onward, Ula drove the song, weaving the two melodies together, sea and sky, water and blood. With a crack of lightning, the transformation took hold. Her hair rippled from her scalp, and in the mirror she saw it billowed and curled like dark smoke. Her skin was hard stone and bloomed with lichen, and when she looked down, she saw her thighs binding. But the scales that emerged were not silver, no. They were not scales at all. Her new tail was black and slick and muscular as an eel. On and on the voices rose, and now Ula thought she could hear the sea moaning, calling out to her, "Home." A great wave slammed against the side of a cliff with a tremendous boom. Another and another. The sea climbed with Ula's song. Water roared over the cliff and rushed into the palace, smashing the windows, pouring over the stairs. Ula heard people screaming. A thousand mortal cries. The water reached her, embraced her, tore the glass from her hand. But it didn't matter. This was blood magic. And the song had a life of its own. The tempest that raged that night broke the land from the northernmost tip of Fjerda and formed the islands that the men of the land now call Kenstjert. The broken heart. The sands turned black and the waters froze, and never warmed again. So now all that exist there are wailing villages, and the few brave souls who can bear such empty places. Sondermann, its treasures and its people. The prophetic's tower and all the learning it contained vanished into the sea. The storm tore the palace of the Sildroher kings from the seabed and wrecked the gardens Ula and Signy had once built, leaving nothing behind. When at last the waters calmed and the sea folk found one another once again, Signy and Rolf and their silver lantern had survived it all. After an appropriate time had passed, he became king. As it happens, Rolf did stay loyal to Signy. Perhaps he loved her all along. Perhaps she knew too many of his secrets. They were married and crowned beneath the ivory arches of a new palace, far smaller and humbler than before. Signy sang her vows, binding herself to Rolf forever. But after that, the new queen never sang again, not even a lullaby. The sea folk grew more cautious, more wary of disaster, more frightened of the shore, and in time, much of their music faded, too. They lived long lives and kept few memories. They forgot old grievances. Not so Ula. She held each sorrow like a chafing grain of sand and grew her grudges like pearls. When Signy gave birth to daughters, six of them, the youngest born with her mother's bright ember hair, Ula rejoiced.
She knew they would be cursed as their father to long for what they shouldn't, and cursed as their mother to give up what they most held dear in the hope for something more. She knew that they would find their way to her in time. The storm had brought Ula to the cold shelter of the northern islands, to the darkened caves and flat black pools where she remains to this day, waiting for the lonely, the ambitious, the clever, the frail, for all those willing to strike a bargain. She never waits for long.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Language of Thorns, Midnight Tales and Dangerous Magic. Written by Leigh Bardugo. Performed by Lauren Fortgang. Executive producers Kristen Lang and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by Leigh Bardugo. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.